Welcome to Baseball America's College Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk college baseball.
All right, welcome to a Baseball America College Podcast powered by Louisville Slugger, power in numbers. We are here for the first time in 2017 to talk college baseball. The preseason top 25 was released today over at baseballamerica.com. TCU is number one for the first time in the rankings history, preseason or otherwise. So let's talk about this. I'm Teddy Cahill. We got Jim Schoenert and Mike Lanana here with me, coming live from the Baseball America studio here. And so let's just dive right into this. TCU, number one. We like this team a lot, guys. I don't think we spent a whole lot of time discussing number one. They went to Omaha for the third straight year last year, and they return essentially their entire team. Mm-hmm. As a result, were the pretty easy choice there. And they also brought in an incredible recruiting class. I mean, it's going to be hard for them to work some of those guys in, but I'm sure they'll find a place for all that talent. Jim, you talked to Jim Schlossnagel there. What's kind of the feeling from Fort Worth?
I mean, they're really excited, understandably. I mean, he talked about, kind of used this as a lead in my story, but my capsule on them. But basically, as soon as they stepped off the bus from Omaha, getting back from Omaha last year, he took them all into their clubhouse there in Fort Worth, and he's like, you know, hey, we're probably, I think the way he phrased it was like, I didn't know we were going to be number one, but I had a feeling we were going to be top three, top five. So I wanted, you know, I was like, I wanted the guys to be ready. I wanted them to know that the expectations were going to be up there for 2017. And yeah, I mean, they bring back what, 8 out of 9 position players, pretty much all their pitchers. I mean, it's a really deep, talented team. And like you said, they've had another, I think they've had back to back top 10 recruiting classes now. And it's, There's not really many holes there. I mean, the one thing he kind of, Coach Schlossnagel kind of talked about is they don't have a lot. Like, their starting pitching is certainly not a weak. Like, they just don't have, like, the first round picks among, like, their junior, their upperclassmen. They don't have, like, the Brandon Finnegans, like, when they, or going back, like, they had a, obviously Jake Arrieta was there, another, you know, past ace of theirs. But, so they may not have that guy, but they've got plenty of depth. And so there's really no wrong answers for them.
I have heard that story about their team meeting, the closing team meeting last year, already at least twice myself, I think. So if TCU continues to be as good as we think they're going to be and goes to Omaha, like I think Schloss will be using that story an awful lot throughout the year. But you're right, the pitching is deep, but it might not be, you know, there's no top guy. They don't have a guy that you look at and say, like, there's a potential first.
Not like
draft.
A guy like last year with Florida when they have AJ Puck,
right,
and Shore and those guys,
right,
or Florida this year with Alex Fado.
Yeah,
but like there's just plenty of depth though.
And Nick Lodolo could be that guy. He was the 41st overall pick in the draft last year, freshman left-hander coming in, and he's expected to be very good. But you know, it's hard to put that on on a freshman. And Luke and Baker, some people had thought of him that way in the past, but he is not going to pitch this year. He's just going to hit, so that takes away another potential Friday option. Not that they're lacking for them, but you know, they may do without him on the mound for the second half of last season.
Yep.
They'll be fine with him just hitting, and there's some thought that he might be even more dangerous as a hitter now that he is just hitting. Mike, what about the Frogs stands out for you?
Well, obviously you and I saw them last year in Omaha and the performance they had, and really a, you know, surprising performance to a lot of people just because of how young they were. You know, getting back to Omaha for a third straight trip with, you know, essentially an entirely different team, and it was really impressive, especially offensively, because in years past they've relied more on pitching, and you know, watching them in Omaha, they were one of the more offensive teams out there, which is tough to do, obviously, in that ballpark. And you know, I think it starts with you know, obviously Luke and Baker, and just his tremendous strength. I mean, the home run that he hit to win that game in Omaha, I think it's still flying. I think it's still, you know, going through the air in Omaha. Maybe it'll land in Iowa, you know, past that the pedestrian bridge there.
But, Bob Carey pedestrian
bridge. Yeah, the Bob Carey pedestrian bridge. Sorry about that. to the travel department of Iowa and Nebraska. But anyway, so you look at them and, you know, clearly watching them last year in Omaha, knowing that they would bring back essentially everybody. You know, I know for me, just like it was for both of you, it was pretty much a no-brainer putting them at number one this year. I mean, obviously, the first five teams, I think, in our rankings are all pretty close. I think we wrestled with a few of them for sure. But for me, they were the clear favorite.
Yeah, they're, I mean, like you mentioned, the top five, all very talented. I think there's a bit of a delineation there for sure. But TCU, again, just with the number of returners, Evan Skaug behind the plate.
Right.
And especially, you know, bringing that leadership and a year older for a lot of these guys, too. I mean, you get time to develop. A lot of them went out for summer ball. Some of them went to the Cape Cod League, had some good summers there. And, you know, you expect them to continue to develop. They were very good last year, and there's reason to believe that these guys can be better. And as we saw last year, I don't think we really needed this to tell us this, but it was a good reminder last year that experience and older players really help you win in college baseball. That was one of the driving factors of Coastal's run, of several of these teams' runs. And TCU is not only, you know, prospecty and talented with guys like Baker and Skaug and Lodolo, Josh Watson, but they're also experienced with guys like Mitchell Traver and Brian Howard and Elliot Barzilli, and the list goes on and on. So I think they're a very exciting team. We're going to be interested in following them all season. Following them at number two is Florida State, and then Florida checks in at number three. LSU and South Carolina round out the top five. Number two is a bit of a sticking point for us. You know, Florida and Florida State have been tied together, you know, not just by geography, but they were the last two super regionals. They faced each other, with Florida coming out on top both times. But we gave the nod, a very slight nod, to Florida State here at number two. Mike, what is it about the Noles that has them ahead of Florida right now?
Well, a lot like TCU, they bring back pretty much everybody. Everyone from what was a very good team last year, a young team last year. You know, they did rely heavily on their freshmen, especially offensively. And, you know, the kind of years that they put together offensively, you know, talking about Kyle Raleigh and Jackson Luke, those guys in particular, as freshmen, I mean, they were tremendous, batting in the middle of the order. And then you look at, you know, bringing back Taylor Walls, who was our first team All-American shortstop last year, and you know, obviously, Dylan Busby, the performance that he put together just in the ACC tournament alone, at four home runs in that tournament, it was pretty wild to watch. I mean, Florida State's always going to be an offensive team just because of the approach that, you know, Coach Martin has there. But, you know, this year especially, there's really not a break or a breather in that lineup. And, you know, it's such a luxury. It's something, it's almost unheard of to have a lineup with four switch hitters in it. I mean, that's so difficult to match up against. And I know Mike Martin told me he doesn't remember having any lineup with that many switch hitters. And I believe him, because it's not something you see, you know, even at the major league level all that often. So, you know, certainly they're going to be really tough to pitch to, as they always are. And then you introduce, you know, freshmen like Drew Mendoza into the mix, who obviously is very highly touted coming in, and a lot of talent, and someone who's going to start right away and play right away, and you would expect to make a positive impact early on for FSU. And then, I mean, beyond that, beyond the offensive depth and what they return from a position player standpoint, they return their entire weekend rotation too, which it's not quite maybe the dominant rotation as some of these other teams in the top five. It's not necessarily loaded with power arms, but it's a formidable group. You have a guy in Drew Carlton that's done it for a couple years now, that's a solid inning eaters type, a guy, you know, who relies on a sinker, who, you know, pitches the contact. You have Cole Sands, who came in highly touted last year, and he's got good stuff. He can run it up there to, you know, 94, 95 at times with his fastball, and, you know, you expect him to take a step forward this year from the inconsistent year last year. And then you have Tyra Holton, who last year was great for them as a freshman left-hander, a guy who posted a sub-3 ERA and did really well and performed well in the ACC tournament as well. So you have a solid returning group there. And, I mean, there are some question marks in the bullpen as far as who's going to step up as closer, but they have guys who've done it before. They have guys who've pitched high-leverage innings, so, you know, you believe that they'll figure it out at some point. You know, if it starts as a closer by committee, so be it. You imagine they'll settle on someone at some point. So,
well, you know, the thing last year was they were really good last year, and they really never settled on a closer anyway. So,
right.
You know, Mike Marin knows how to manage that bullpen out there.
Yeah, so, I mean, if that's your only question, I mean, it's really not that big of a question with them. I think they're a very complete team. I think they're clearly the team to beat in the ACC. And, you know, obviously we went back and forth between them and Florida. It was a difficult decision. You know, I could see it both ways. I could see both arguments. But I know to me, looking at FSU, it's just how complete they are and how many known quantities they have coming into this year.
I mean, for me, I look at Florida State and, you know, the pitching, the three returning starters really stands out to me. I mean, you always expect they're going to hit, and it's a very talented lineup. And to have that experience back on the staff, I think that's going to be critical for them. And they're a little bit different than Florida. I mean, they really are. They're you know, with Florida State, we're talking about this older team. We're talking about a team trying to get back to Omaha for the first time since 2012. With Florida, it's a little bit younger still. They had six players last year drafted in the first 88 picks. They're reloading, and the talent is there, but there are a little more questions. They don't return their entire rotation. A.J. Puck, it was the sixth overall pick, and Logan Shore was a Golden Spikes finalist, and those guys are both gone now. And so is Dane Dunning, who was also a first-rounder and did some very important work for them as a swing man. But Florida, being Florida, they're going to pitch. Alex Fado could be the first overall pick in this year's draft. He moves to Friday nights. Brady Singer could be the first overall pick in next year's draft. He was the number one prospect in the Cape this summer. He'll go behind. He'll move into the rotation from the bullpen. Jackson Coar will round it out. That's three really good pitchers. The offense was pretty young last year, with the exception of Alonzo and Reed. And so they bring back an awful lot offensively. And if those guys can continue to get better, guys like Jonathan India, Dalton Guthrie, Deacon Lippitt, and then you mix in some guys from the third-ranked recruiting class this year, you've got an awful lot of talent on the roster again at Florida. And they are, to me, the SEC favorite. They're the first SEC team in the poll, following TCU and Florida State. Behind them, we now get LSU and South Carolina. And Jim, when we look at both of those teams, LSU fits this older, experienced, largely returning team that we've talked about, and South Carolina pitches an awful lot. But Alex Lane there for LSU on Friday nights. I mean, everyone in the SEC has really good Friday night starters, but Alex Lane is kind of a standout here. And gives LSU a chance to really make some noise every Friday night.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, with him on Fridays and Jared Pache on Saturdays, I mean, those are two, as experienced guys as you can get. I mean, Pache was the guy, they get him back as a senior, which they did not expect. And he's a guy who's been in their rotation since, anyway. Yeah, so, I mean, it's a good thing to have with those two guys. And they're still, also, we talked. The thing with them last year is they had to break in basically an entirely new lineup. Basically, everyone other than Jake Fraley was new, and now it's different. Now all those lineup guys have experience, so it's going to be I would expect to be a much more rounded team. I would expect them to get off to a really good start. And I mean they're going to be there's a lot of talent on that team. In South Carolina, they had a big year last year to get back to Super Regionals. Now they're trying to get back to Omaha for the first time under Chad Holbrook. But, yeah, I mean, those are two teams that are going to be right there. I mean, we'll see how deep the SEC is this year, but those are all teams to watch.
It'll be interesting to watch the way the East unfolds this year in the SEC. Last year, South Carolina won the East, and that was a big deal for them. They edged Florida, caught him on the last weekend. So that should be fun again this year. You throw in Vanderbilt, who's number 11 in these rankings, and obviously the SEC East will be fun. The SEC West behind LSU, a little more open. We don't have another West team ranked. But, you know, you can expect A&M and Mississippi State and Arkansas, even Ole Miss. You know, there's going to be competition out there, and the SEC looks rugged again. But I think these three teams, given what they have coming back and the kind of star power that all three of them can run out there, especially on Friday nights. You know, we talked about Fado and Lane. South Carolina is trying to decide between Will Crow and Clark Schmidt, two potential day one picks to be their Friday starter. So you look at the elite talent, you look at the depth, the experience. These teams have an awful lot of all of that, and that's why they rank in the top five. And we're very excited to see how that race plays out as a whole. Now the top five: TCU, Florida State, Florida, LSU, South Carolina. That's a lot of blue bloods. That's a lot of Omaha experience here. The number six team here, East Carolina, is not that. East Carolina has never been to Omaha. They came within 90 feet last year in Super Regionals against Texas Tech. Couldn't quite get that winning run in Game 2, and then Texas Tech came back and won it in Game 3 to advance to Omaha themselves. But East Carolina returns pretty much that entire team, don't they, Mike?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically everybody. And, I mean,
they had nobody drafted last year.
Yeah, which is it's a good thing and a bad thing. You know, it's obviously, if you have guys drafted, it means that you have a lot of talented players and you have a lot of prospects. But at the same time, there's something to be said for experience and having done it before. And that plays in college baseball. And you look at this team and you look at what they accomplished last year. I mean, very few expected them to go as far as they did last year. Even the year before, when they won the AAC tournament and got into a regional that year, very few expected them to get that far that year. And it's really a testament to the culture that Cliff Godwin has built there, you know, as head coach since taking over 2 years ago. It's just this toughness and this grittiness about them, and they find ways to win. And so you bring back all those guys who have played under that mindset, who've played in that culture the past couple of years and have found success with it. You know, they're all a year older, they're all a year wiser, and then you bring in the number 23 ranked recruiting class with a few freshmen who can impact the team right away. You know, guys like Bryant Packard, Spencer Brickhouse, Trey Benton, who will likely be their Sunday starter and is a guy with power stuff. And then you bring back your Friday starter, Evan Krasinski, who, you know, posted a 2.01 ERA last year and doesn't have blow it by you stuff, but he's a competitor on the mound on Friday nights, a left-hander with good secondary stuff and a feel to pitch. And then you bring back Travis Watkins, a fifth-year senior, who just went bananas last year in the regional, you know, homering nonstop, and, you know, a guy who really found his swing at that point and has evolved as an offensive player to match his defensive skill set. And then you have guys like Duane Williams Sutton, a freshman last year, an outfielder who has a lot of tools, who's a guy who's a legitimate prospect and a guy who you'll see on a lot of draft boards next year in his junior year. So there are a lot of interesting pieces there, and the expectations are very high there. I'll tell you that. I was at Greenville last week talking with Coach Godwin there and a few of the veterans on the team, and I have a story that will be coming out soon talking about how they've sort of built that culture there. But this team is for real. I know you might look at this top 25 and see East Carolina at number 6 and be like, whoa, you know, where did that come from? But this is something that's been building for a couple of years now. And, you know, finally the talent is sort of matching up with the toughness that they have. And so they're going to be, you know, an interesting team to watch this year for sure.
It's East Carolina's highest preseason ranking ever, coming in at number 6. We got Louisville behind them at 7, Fullerton, Oregon State, and Clemson round out the top 10. Oregon State, the first Pac-12 team, checking in at number 9. That's a team that's pretty motivated, aren't they, Jimmer? You know, considering that last year they're probably the biggest snub from the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, it was either, you could argue for them or North Carolina, but yeah, I would say for me it would have been Oregon State. I thought they had
tied third in the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean, it admittedly down Pac-12, but they, you know, they were playing well towards the end, and obviously they overcame a lot of injuries. It was surprising they didn't get in. And I think at the time, I can't remember what their RPI was in the selection time. I think it was, might have been in the 40s. But, I mean, there were teams with worse RPIs that got in. I mean, Washington got in with a worse RPI than Oregon State had. But, anyway, I mean, you know, Oregon State, certainly first time they've missed the tournament since 2008. And, yeah, I mean, they're it's definitely made them hungrier. I mean, they're, Pat Casey talked a little bit about it when I spoke with him. It's, you know, for him, he's pretty, you know, he doesn't, you know, he didn't get, I don't know how emotional he gets about talking about many things, but he certainly didn't get emotional. He didn't get, he was pretty, you know, pretty flatline about it, but yeah, no, but that's for the, yeah, he said, but yeah, for the players, it is a motivator, and they've got a lot back. I mean, they had a lot of injuries last year, like I said. I mean, Drew Rasmussen being the biggest one, their ace, but, and, you know, we went down with TJ, and, but they get, so they're kind of, they hope to get him back, but that's not really knowing when, but, yeah, they had some guys break out in the rotation last year, like Bryce Femmel
Luke Heimlich.
Heimlich, yeah, I was trying to blank there, but yeah, and Max Engelbrecht is back in the rotation to close things out in the bullpen. So they've got some arms. They've got obviously some talented freshmen coming in, like Verberg and Gambrill. So they had another top 25 recruiting class. And offensively, you know, they've got talent. They do lose Logan Ice, a veteran catcher, but most of the rest of the lineup is back, and Morrison, their shortstop. So two up the middle guys are gone, but pretty much everyone else is back, and they're just going to. Obviously, KJ Harrison is probably the guy that will get the most attention. Their leading home run hitter from a year ago. He'll get a little time catching as well this year with another freshman, Adley Rutschman, who's their top position player recruit. He's another guy with some power, so they should have a deeper lineup. Should be a little bit more offensive. Pat Casey talked about they could probably last year pretty much Harrison and Ice were their only power guys. I think I wrote about this in my caps on them. I think those two had like 17 of their 20 something home runs.
I believe
as a
it was
team.
17 of 25.
Yeah, so 25 is pretty low for a team total, and have two of it be, or two guys account for 2/3 of it. But so they should be a little deeper. They're healthier. Elliot Carey's back, another guy who outfielder who missed all of last year. They're hoping some of their sophomores. Obviously, they had a great year from Nick Madrigal, one of their a freshman last year, but some of their other guys from that class were a bit underwhelming, so they're hoping for those guys to come through this year. Guys like Hayden Grenier, who was a top prospect in the West Coast League, if I remember right, or the Cal Collegiate League, one of them.
West Coast League.
West Coast League, coming out of high school, which I know Mike was excited about.
Mm-hmm.
So the guys like that, some of that sophomore class, if those guys take a step forward this year, and guys like Harrison and Rutschman kind of anchor the middle of the lineup, and Carey coming back, they could be a pretty. They should be a good offensive team. They've got options on the mound, and like I said, they had them as the top Pac-12 team. Fullerton as the top West Coast team overall. But yeah, I mean the Beavers. You know, we got the Beavers and UW right down there, at number 12, not far behind. But yeah, they're looking. They should be back. I think that last year should be an aberration for the Beavs.
The Pac-12 race was very interesting last year. In large part because Utah was dealing with an under 500 record while trying to win the Pac-12, and they ultimately did do that. I think the Pac-12 race will be very interesting again this year, but without the strange component of a sub-500 team trying to win a power conference. Oregon State, Washington, Stanford, Arizona, these teams all look very, very intriguing. We have Oregon State here at the top. Jimmy, you mentioned Washington, hot on their heels there at 12. And then Arizona and Stanford are a little bit further down at 22 and 23. You got some teams trying to come back from down years. Oregon State and Stanford both missed the tournament last year. You got Washington trying to really build on some momentum, trying to break through to super regionals for the first time. And you got Arizona coming off of, you know, being the national runner-up, one win away from a national title in Jay Johnson's first year, but they have to replace an awful lot. So it's an interesting Pac-12. Mike, is there a Pac-12 team that kind of jumps out to you as an interesting team, not necessarily as the favorite, just as a team that you want to, you're excited about seeing this year?
Yeah, let's talk about Washington. Let's talk about Washington. You look at this group, and obviously a successful year last year, and they return a whole lot. I mean, they're in good shape. You look at bringing back Jack Meggs, who You know, I had a couple of Pac-12 coaches tell me they thought he was the most valuable player, you know, in the Pac-12 just because of what he brought to his team in terms of his leadership.
And we should note that Lindsey Meggs, his father, was not one of those coaches.
He was not one of those coaches, so it was not a biased, it was not a biased thing. But you look at them, and they do bring back a lot. And, you know, they had some young pieces last year that really needed to develop. You know, you look at A.J. Graffinino at shortstop. You know, a guy who came in with a lot of tools and defensive ability but didn't necessarily hit all that well. He had his struggles offensively. He's gained some weight. He had a nice cape, put on about 25 pounds, so he has a chance to produce a little bit more this year. I know talking to Lindsey Meggs, he's really excited about the progress Joey Morgan has made behind the plate and thinks when it's all said and done, he'd probably be one of the top catching prospects out on the West Coast when it comes time for the draft. So, you know, they do bring back a lot. And then you look at the weekend rotation, you bring back Noah Bremer, who has been really their guy the past couple of years on Fridays and has been really steady, one of the steadier arms in the Pac-12 the past couple of years. And then Joe Demers, a guy who you look at the stat line last year and it was a little ugly, you know, an ERA over six, but, you know, has good stuff, you know, came in very highly touted, a very talented freshman, but obviously had his struggles. This year so far in the fall, he looked like a different guy and a guy who's using more of his arsenal, who's really developing as a pitcher and less of a thrower. And so expectations are high for him this year. Obviously, it's wait and see, but expectations are high. So, you know, the biggest question mark with Washington at this point is replacing the closer. Obviously, Troy Wallings, what he did last year, I mean, just look at the numbers. They're insane. And, you know, right now they're looking at a freshman to replace him, Josh Bergman in particular, although it's possible he could work in the rotation at some point too. They still haven't finalized it, but, you know, he's a guy who consistently pitches around 93, touches 94, and they just love his mindset. They think he could fit that closer's role, but we'll see. It's easier said than done. He obviously has really big shoes to fill, and, you know, we saw what happened, you know, last year with UCLA trying to replace Berg. I mean, that was a difficult thing for them to do in the back end of the bullpen. So when you lose a guy like that, you know, you wonder sometimes how it's going to impact you, but that's the biggest question mark. Otherwise, with them, there are a lot of pieces to be excited about.
And Troy Rollins was so important. I mean, he was the Pac-12 pitcher of the year. Like, he was, and he threw multiple innings. Like, there was an awful lot about Troy Rollins that, you know, it's not just a one-inning guy that you're trying to replace. So that is a big question mark. And they struggled down the stretch when he was out at the end of last season. But I think it's a major difference trying to replace a guy like that on the fly versus knowing that he's going to be gone and that you have, you know, 6 months to figure it out. So I expect them to have the back end of the bullpen sorted out a bit more than what you saw at the end of last season without Rollins. I mentioned Arizona and Stanford before. Stanford, obviously, I don't know that they needed any extra motivation after missing the tournament in back-to-back years. But this is Mark Marquess's final season. After 41 seasons, he'll retire at the end of this year. So if they needed any extra motivation, it's there. They definitely want to send him off right. You know, they're aiming to find the perfect ending for him. And Arizona is intriguing. They lost an awful lot from last year's team. Bobby Dalbec's gone, Nathan Bannister, Zach Gibbons, and Cody Raymer. Those were all very important players to a team that finished second in the country last year. They went a little junior college heavy while they were bringing in the 10th ranked recruiting class. So if they can get those guys to mesh quickly, they should be in a good position because obviously, in addition to the talent they had last year, Arizona's team chemistry really was a big asset for them, and I think that was a key component to their Omaha run. So trying to find a way to make that happen, you know, give this team the same kind of cohesion, that's definitely one of the tasks the coaching staff is trying to work on, in addition to, you know, ironing out where everyone plays and pitches. So we talked about Arizona as the national runner-up. Let's talk about the defending national champions, Coastal Carolina. They check in at number 15. They lost an awful lot from last year, obviously. That was a very old team, and in the lineup particularly, there are a lot of players that that moved on to pro ball or just graduated. But they bring back Andrew Beckwith, the College World Series most outstanding player. They bring back Alex Cunningham and Jason Billis and Bobby Holmes on the mound. They should be strong on the mound. Jimmer, what do you make of Coastal here as we move into 17?
Yeah, it's kind of like what you said. They kind of lost some of their heart and soul guys, like, you know, Anthony Marks, Zach Remillard, some of the guys like that on the offensive side. But I mean, they should still have plenty of talent. They're always been at their best. They've been a program known for offense, and they play in an offensive ballpark. So I wouldn't expect that to hold them back. I mean, maybe they. I mean, sure, they'll have to sort some things out lineup wise in the early going. But I mean, I've pretty complete faith that they can figure it out. And like you're saying, I mean, they've on the mound. They're pretty set. I mean, they do have to replace Mike Morrison, which won't be easy. But I mean, the rotation, they've got options. They've got some freshmen they like, and like you said, Beckwith is back, so they can. And he can do pretty much whatever you want him to do. So I think
and he did last year.
Yes, exactly. So I mean, I think they'll be fine. And we debated on about where to place them. I think we kind of had them a little lower just because of how much the offense they're losing. But then we kind of realized, you know, they are the defending champs, and they've got guys in that dugout that are winners, and they've got experience on the mound, and that coaching staff now is. You know, has a championship on his resume, so they you know kind of gave them a little more credit once we kind of upon further reflection.
I think how they have some pieces offensively. Billy Cook out there in the outfield, and Kevin Woodall and Brandon Woodmyers. I mean, they have some pieces. They'll have to figure it out. But like you said, offensive ballpark. I don't think they're going to lead the country in home runs again this mm-hmm. year. But with the pitching staff they have, with Beckwith on Friday nights and him locked into that this year, as opposed to them not being sure that he could handle starting for a full season, and does he work better as a bullpen ace or as a closer? I mean, they're settled on they can settle on what they want him to do, and with Cunningham and Billis behind them, and Billis especially being a year further away from Tommy John surgery that he had his senior year of high school. I think they can pitch at a higher level this year, which means that their offense doesn't need to produce the kinds of gaudy numbers that they did last year. And it's a program with a lot of momentum, obviously. They're really believing in themselves right now, and they should, considering what they did last year. I think we'll all miss Anthony Marks. They'll miss Anthony Marks. We'll miss Anthony Marks.
Such a funny guy.
He's
a great guy.
He was great on the dais there in Omaha. So was Mike Morrison. Several of their guys were very, very good interviews.
Lots of anecdotes about wearing jorts and playing basketball. And
I mean, you won't get that anywhere else,
no.
I feel like. We will all miss that, but I think they will be able to find another left fielder, and that they'll be able to get an offense together that you know is capable of supporting the strong pitching staff that Drew Thomas, their pitching coach, has to work with. So they're 15. I didn't mention the 11 through 15. Vanderbilt, Washington, Louisiana Lafayette, who is the Sun Belt favorite just ahead of Coastal. New conference for Coastal this year as well. NC State at 14, Coastal 15, Virginia 16, UNC 17, Oklahoma State 18, UC Santa Barbara and Long Beach State 19 and 20. And I wanted to talk about the Big West here for a second. We kind of glossed over Fullerton in the top 10. But the Big West as a whole, those three teams, Fullerton, Beach, UCSB, they're all in the top 20. And I think the Big West can be really good this year. Cal Poly, UC Irvine, not ranked, but we expect them to be very good. The Big West, top to bottom, I think it's a very good conference. I think they've got a lot of intriguing teams. And they've sent a representative to Omaha 3 years in a row, and it's been a different team each time. So a lot of teams in that conference have experience playing well in the postseason, and they're going to be tested within the conference this year, and I think that it's going to be a fun race all season long. We have Fullerton at the top. They bring back their entire rotation, and it's a good rotation with Colton Eastman, John Gavin, Connor Siebold. All those guys could start on Friday nights. They have an older lineup. UCSB and Long Beach have a few more question marks, but they played well in the postseason last year. Obviously, UCSB goes to Omaha. Long Beach goes and gets to a regional final, brings back a lot of offense. They both bring back a fair amount of offense, and with those pitching staffs and in those parks, I think we trust, and knowing the younger pitchers that they have, I think we really trust Beach and UCSB to pitch, they have the offense this year, maybe, you know, being a little older, maybe they can support the pitching staff, kind of the opposite of what we just talked about with Coastal there. Rounding this out, Georgia Tech, Arizona, Stanford, Maryland, Texas Tech. We have a few ACC teams down here near the bottom. Mike, who down here, Virginia, UNC, Georgia Tech, a little higher, NC State? I mean, what's kind of jumping out from the ACC here at the back half of the poll?
Well, to me, you know, I think all these teams are pretty close at this point. I think they all have significant questions, although obviously not significant enough to keep them out of the top 25, but still questions that I think will end up determining, you know, obviously how these teams line up at the end of the year. I mean, you look at North Carolina State, they do bring back a ton of offense. I think they're going to hit really well. Curious to see how they line up on the mound, especially in the weekend rotation. You know, for me, that's kind of my question mark with them. You look at Virginia, obviously won it all a couple of years ago, and they bring back a lot offensively. They're going to miss Matt Theiss and the thump that he had in the middle of the order. I mean, obviously a tremendous power hitter and a very patient, disciplined hitter. You know, but they bring back Pavin Smith. They bring back Adam Hazley, who's huge in terms of just his center field defense, being a leadoff hitter. He might possibly bat in the middle of the order, too. He's added some muscle. And obviously being a Friday starter and a guy who's pitched in Omaha and has been really good, you know, the key for Virginia is can they piece the rest of it together on the mound and in the bullpen? And there are signs that they can. You know, Evan Sperling missed last year with Tommy John surgery, but, you know, he's got good stuff. And, you know, he was a guy, he was a name in high school. And, you know, he's got the chance, he's looked good so far, to come in there and really shove, you know, with the stuff that he has. So, but again, it's a question mark because he hasn't done it before. And then you look at North Carolina, and obviously they've missed the tournament the last 2 years, which is strange for a program that was, you know, really a yearly Omaha team for a while there. And obviously it's a team that's going to be hungry to get back into the postseason, but, you know, they have their questions too. Obviously, having not been there, they return a lot of the same guys. They take steps forward. There are signs that they will take those steps forward. And certainly you look at their pitching staff and how deep it is. You know, you already have J.P. Bukauskas, who is one of the top draft prospects leading up into this draft, leading their rotation. And then you bring in the arms that they brought in their recruiting class. You know, they're very, very deep on the mound, even after losing Hunter Williams for academic reasons. So, you know, for me, the question is, okay, can these guys who have missed the postseason in the last 2 years, can they figure it out? Can they take a step forward? And can they win those big games and finish off series? You know, so that's what we'll see. And then Georgia Tech, for me, I mean, they're always going to hit. They have a very good lineup, but can they stay healthy on the mound? That was the big key for them last year, and we'll see what they do this year.
Last year, Georgia Tech got off to a great start, and it was really attributable in large part to their young pitching, and they couldn't keep it up, partially because they had some injuries, partially the schedule strengthened a little bit. So as those guys get older and they get those guys back this year healthy, I really like the upside of Georgia Tech. They're going to have to stay healthy, like you said. I mean, they can't endure the injuries they had last year. They made it to regionals last year, but they were by that time they weren't quite the same team that they'd been at their peak. And UNC, on talent, I mean, they could be ranked a lot higher than this, I think.
Definitely.
But when you lose when you lose what they lost and off a team that, you know, and you haven't made the tournament for the last couple of years, there are some question marks, and there are unknowns here. They're dealing with a bit of a younger team. These guys are still largely sophomores. They have some juniors mixed in. Brian Miller, very good. Moving to the outfield and Bukauskas, like you mentioned, but you know they're a younger team and they're going to have to find a way to win, which is something that they've struggled with a little bit the last couple of years. And I think they'll finish better in the ACC than they did last year. Mm-hmm. But
And expanding the ACC tournament obviously helps because they just missed the cut last year being one of those 10 teams. So
right. I mean, but yeah. you figure, though, they have to finish better than 11th.
You would think
ACC.
So. You would think so.
Their record might not be that much better, but the their overall record might not be that much better. But I figure they almost have to finish better than 11th in the ACC this year with the kind of talent they have.
Yeah, for sure. I think they get back into the tournament this year. You know, I think they do. I don't think they miss three NCAA tournaments in a row, but we'll see.
With us putting them there at 17, we are endorsing them as a tournament team, and I mean that's a borderline host. When Jimmer goes to make out his field of 64 here this week, we'll take the top 16 teams as hosts, and UNC right off that. They have the talent to do this.
Mm-hmm.
We just want it. We want to see it a little bit, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them swinging in either direction in this poll, depending on how things go early in the season, because they have a tough schedule to start out too. I mean, they're opening against Kentucky, which, you know, obviously it's not a team that's ranked, but they've got some talent on that team.
It's hardly a cream. I mean, that's an SEC team. It's coming. They're coming to UNC. I mean, that's hardly a cream puff opening weekend. They're going to see some stuff on opening weekend.
And then they have Long Beach State coming in soon after that. So it'll be interesting. I think we'll know early what kind of team they're going to be.
Yeah, the early going is going to be very important for them, especially as they try and get the taste of last year out of their mouth a little bit.
Right.
Also down here, I wanted to mention we got Maryland, the Big Ten favorites. The Big Ten is a little bit tough to predict right now. It feels like it always is. But this year, we've got Maryland in here at 24. They've got a lot coming back. Mike Shawarin, who was so important to them during his career, is gone. He was drafted in the fifth round last year. But they got a lot of... When I talk to John Scheff, I mean, he feels like this pitching staff is the deepest he's had. He feels like they've got four or five starters, four or five guys in the bullpen. Like, they all can be really good, and that kind of depth they just haven't had. And if they're able to, if the pitching staff lives up to that, they've got hitters back. Kevin Smith took a big step forward over the summer in the Cape. He'll anchor it at shortstop. They've got some experience up and down that lineup. That's a team that's also trying to get back into the postseason after missing last year. They've been to back-to-back super regionals before that. This is a team that can do that, that can come out of the Big Ten and make some noise again. The Terps have done that before, and this time, you know, they're just trying to do it without Shawarin, but they've got the guys now that they don't have to rely on the pitcher that was nicknamed the Unicorn. they've got other program leaders now. They've matured as a program to the point where they can handle that.
And maybe they'll find some other mythological creature along the way. But
Kevin
see.
Smith, I don't know. I mean, he could use a mythological creature nickname. He is potentially that good for them.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Well,
I feel like one of our coworkers, Josh Bear Norris, would be better at coming up with mythological
name. I am atrocious at nicknames, so I'm not going to attempt it. But I am going to suggest that someone at Maryland start calling Kevin Smith some mythological creature.
Yeah, they need something else.
I mean, we got a lot of play out of Mike Shawarin being the Unicorn last year.
Right. He had a Snapchat filter.
He did, and they emojied it all the time. Like, it was. We need that again.
Yeah, we need something like that. So figure it out, Maryland.
So that runs us through the 25. There were plenty of good teams beyond this that we kicked around a little bit. Texas A&M, mm-hmm. Rice, those two stick in my mind.
Houston, we talked about a little bit.
We talked about Houston a little bit.
All the Texas teams.
All Texas all the time, apparently.
Everything's bigger there. So.
Michigan, also in the Big Ten. We kicked around a little bit. And both Mississippi and Mississippi State. So there are talented teams here. It really... When we're trying to narrow it to 25, there are some teams. I mean, we only have these 25 slots. Some teams just inevitably end up, missing the cut. That this is the nature of a top 25 ranking.
Right.
But there are very talented teams beyond this. It's going to be an exciting year in college baseball. We're only a few weeks away, which is a little scary. We've got a lot of preview content left to finish here. But we've got a top 25 now, and that means that the season's coming up pretty soon.
It does, and I'll tell you what, Teddy, I'm jacked. I'm pretty jacked about the season, and I'm pretty jacked because I had probably an unhealthy amount of coffee this morning. But, you know, it is coming. It is coming soon, but it's going to be fun to get out at baseball fields again and see a lot of this talent in action. And, you know, we're going to have a lot of great teams, you know, here in our area, you know, around Durham and our neck of the woods, just because we have a lot of ACC teams here. But, you know, we're also obviously going to be traveling around and trying to get out there and see as many teams as we can. And I tell you what, I'm excited. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to get out of my cubicle. I'm ready to spread my wings and fly, Teddy. Let's cover some college baseball. Let's do it.
Mike has the enthusiasm this morning. Opening day is February 17. We will have the enthusiasm then. Between now and then, you can read all kinds of stuff over at baseballamerica.com about this upcoming season. We're rolling out preview capsules, breaking down these top 25 teams, five a day. So if you go to baseballamerica.com, you can see all of those throughout this week. The following week, we will start with our conference previews. Those extend for 2 weeks. All Americans will also be coming out next week. Plenty of features will be drifting over to the website in that time as well. And the magazine, which we send to press on Thursday, will then hit newsstands a week or so later. So you can be sure to pick that up if you like the physical copy as well. The cover will be pretty cool this year. I'm excited about it. I'm excited for you guys to see it. And then once the season starts, obviously we'll have plenty more to talk about then. But we'll be podcasting between now and February 17. So check back here. Check back at baseballamerica.com. Pick up the magazine. It's all happening. College baseball season, it's here. And we are excited about it here at Baseball America. So thanks to Jim Schoenert, who had to go take a phone call in the middle of this to help finish out our college preview content.
We are still not done.
We are so not done. So thank you to Jim. Thank you to Mike. I've been Teddy Cahill, and thank you for listening.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit BaseballAmerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.